when the sky is high. No reason to stay on ground. Lift your hands and you can touch and fly.
Hello and welcome to the Aviatrix Book Review. I'm Liz Booker and I have a very special guest today who I'm so excited to talk to. She is a native of St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands, a C-130 pilot and lieutenant commander in the United States Coast Guard, and her story is featured in Chapter 10 of Anne McCollum Statt's High Flyers, 15 Inspiring Women Aviators and Astronauts. And the chapter is entitled Semper Paratus, Always Ready, which is the Coast Guard's motto. Lieutenant Commander Renaqua Russell, welcome.
Thank you.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to talk with you. Oh man. You know, I'm going to start out with the Fab Five, which I think is a fabulous title. And I don't know when it came up, whether it was around the event of you receiving your Air Medal,
yes,
or if it was before then, but I just think it's brilliant. And I love the model that you guys have established for supporting each other in aviation. And we'll explain all that in a couple of minutes, but I just wanted to put that out there to start with.
Yes, we actually have eight now. So we haven't come up with a good name. We're great. We're still fine tuning that. That's great. So we had as you know, more of, you know, Black women aviators started winging. So I was five, we had six, we had a large bunch. It was like, they had a picture go viral for a while, but there was like, I want to say like 15 or so, or more like, Black students going through flight school for the Coast Guard, which is like pretty unheard of. Just like, you rarely see, you know, like women, anything like Black women, Black men. So, it was kind of huge, but they 6, 7, and 8 came pretty quickly. So we kind of like, as we had more, we were like, we can't be the Fab Five anymore. So we had like, I can't remember what 6 was. We had Stupendous 7 for a bit. And then we're just having fun with it.
Good for you. And good for you for like reaching out and supporting each other. It's something that I think it took a while for the women to figure out in the Coast Guard. I will just say, I'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
And just praise the way that you guys have gone about things. And I definitely will talk about that more later. But first, let's talk about you. So you are a native of St. Thomas, the Virgin Islands. And, you know, your story is in this wonderful book, High Flyers by Anne McCollum Statt. And I interviewed Anne, and I'll link to that interview in the show notes. But she covered 15 different people and mm-hmm. very heavy on the Army, I will say. And I gave her a hard time about yes. that, but I was so yes. grateful and relieved to see our Coast Guard representation and that it was you. It well deserved, because you're a fabulous role model for everyone. But so tell us a little bit about you and the Virgin Islands and how that, like your interest in aviation and how that led you to the Coast Guard.
Yes. So, yep. VI Massive. That's what people see. Cause it's funny. So this was, I'm going to just answer questions. So that was one of the questions. There was a picture that went, you know, when the Air Medal thing went viral, people were like, oh, is it gang sign? It's actually Virgin Islands. So it's the V and the I, and I always throw it up.
How do I do it? Like this?
Yes. Like that. Virgin Islands.
Virgin Islands. Yep. I love it. Okay. VI.
But so yes, I'm born and raised in the Virgin Islands. And, I guess my first spark of aviation, kind of happened just so, the Virgin Islands is an island. It's very small. And if you go anywhere, you have to travel. So I have a lot of family that lived in like other islands, that lived in the States. And so from young, I kind of grew up traveling. My dad lived on another island. So American Eagle was like how I got to go see family just all the time. So I loved flying as a kid and I did it, you know, so young. But the only interaction at the time I had was flight attendant. So I wanted to be a flight attendant actually as a little kid. I have an uncle that flew for American Airlines. It was US Airways at the time. Obviously, they merged with American. And he had come home and he was like, you know, I think I was like 5 or 6. He was like, what do you want to be when you grow up, Renaqua? What you ask every kid. And I was like, oh, I want to be a flight attendant. And he was like, I think you have the personality to be a pilot. And that was pretty much the seeds that he planted from like kid me to wanting to be a pilot. How I wanted to go military was more so. So my grandparents were very involved in my childhood, and my grandfather was a Korean War veteran. So I grew up kind of like hearing about, you know, the military, his experiences. He was very regimented, in a good way. I think every kid needs. But I had considered at the time going Navy, because what my aunt and my uncle were both in the Navy. We grew up seeing them. We used to visit them over in Roosevelt Roads, which was a based in Puerto Rico. So we would always go over and see them, and then we'd visit them in Coronado. So I kind of was thinking Navy at the time. When I was about, I think like 13 or so in high school, these two pilots were, and it's so crazy because it's just how life works out. But they actually were like doing a destination wedding in St. John, which is the neighboring island from St. Thomas. They were looking for local entertainment. So I sang at the time, but my mom had a website because she sang, and they found her website and they were like, hey, we want to have someone sing. And they were like, we saw you have a note we wanted. They weren't going to have like, you know, bridesmaids or flower girls or anything as a destination wedding. So they were like, can your daughter sing at the wedding? And my mom was like, sure. So we met at them at the rehearsal dinner. So we'd never met these people before. Like, it was literally just an email. I remember going over, we went over, took the boat over to St. John and met them at the rehearsal dinner. The couple were both Academy grads. I think it was like 99 and 2000, but the wife's family traveled around the world sailing. And so they had been to the Virgin Islands, and that's why they wanted to come back and get married. So we met the family, we hit it off. I sang at the wedding. They had a flyover from Air Station Barrincon, which was really cool. And then at the reception, they were like, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? And at the time I was like, I want to be a Navy pilot. Cause that's just who I was. That's who I know. Cause that was, you know, what my aunt and uncle did. And so they were like, well, have you ever considered the Coast Guard? And I was like, what? I hadn't really heard about the Coast Guard. I mean, I probably saw them growing up because, you know, we have like auxiliary props. Shout out to the auxiliary for always doing the boating safety courses. So I'd seen the boating safety, but I hadn't really knew. I didn't know anything about the Coast Guard. My family didn't either. And so, yeah, they told me about the Coast Guard, but then specifically the Coast Guard Academy and the AIM program, which is the Academy Introduction Mission Program. So I did AIM that summer. And I loved it. Like, I had a blast. And I was like ready to sign up then and there. I was too young. So I kind of, my way to the academy was a very roundabout way. I eventually made it because I did college beforehand in the Virgin Islands. So I was too young to go to the academy when I graduated high school. So you have to be 17 at least. And I graduated at 16. So I did 2 years of college before going to the academy.
Wow, lady. And did I see something about like a scholarship to Columbia too?
I did. Yeah. So that's actually kind of what happened. So I had been, it was actually a program I was in. So I'd gotten a full ride when I applied. I went to the high school I went to back in the Virgin Islands. They have a program with the University of the Virgin Islands. It's called the Early Admissions Program. So you essentially do your freshman year of college and your senior year of high school at the same time. So I had applied for that my junior year, which is the same year AIM was. And I did AIM and then found out when I got back that I'd been accepted to the program. But then I was too young, so I did the early admissions program. The major I was in was a dual degree program. So you did 3 years at University of the Virgin Islands and then 2 years at Columbia. And I did not go through the rest of that program because there was some confusion on how the financial aid worked. So I had gotten a full ride from UVI, but my scholarship only applied to UVI, and I would have had to pay Columbia tuition, which even now, I mean, back then that was 2007. Yeah, it was $50,000 plus and did not have that money. And I knew from young, I kind of never really wanted to be in debt like that or have like large amounts of student loans. So that was actually like, I it's funny. I remember my grandmother picked me up from class because I was young. I was like 16, 17. So my parents would pick me up to and from college. So I remember my grandma picked me up and they'd had like the info, like the representatives from Columbia had come and was like, this is what the program is like. Cause I'd pretty much given up trying to go to the academy. Cause I was like, well, I have this other opportunity here. But then I found out like, oh, you're going to have to pay $100,000+ for schooling. And I don't have that money. And I didn't qualify for like full ride for federal aid. Like I'd probably get some scholarship for federal aid, but I'd have to have taken out loans or something or grants. And I was like devastated. I was in the car. My grandma picked me up and she was the one that said, well, what about the Coast Guard Academy? Like, why don't we see if they still want you? And I had sung the national anthem at my AIM graduation. And so I got to like get my grandmother has a saying, she says, make yourself a name and not a number. And so she had called the academy and was like, and I was super embarrassed because I was just like, stop it, grandma. she had called the academy and was like, hey, my granddaughter sings, like if you need somebody to do the national anthem. And so I got to like meet the director of admissions. So through that connection, years later, we like, when things kind of went south with one program, my grandma called up the director and was like, hey. And yeah, that's how I ended up coming back to the academy through a very roundabout way and then graduated. And here I am.
Oh, what? That's such a great story. I love that. You know, how humiliating for you, but also how wonderful that your grandmother.
No, she's like, so I'm very like normally pretty introverted. I'm like, I'm just trying to make like, I moved from the VI because it's a small island and everybody knows everybody. But I was like, oh, I love that. Like when I moved to the States, the anonymity of being in the States. So when like all of this blew up, everybody who knows me was like, oh, like, it's like, oh, wow, there's so much attention. So it took a while. It took some time to get used to that because I've always just been like, oh yeah, I'm just going
through. You seem to be handling it just fine. I just want to say.
Yeah.
Better than I might have where you are in your career, to be honest with you. So I don't know if you know this, but I was my last 2 years in the Coast Guard were spent as the senior defense official to Barbados in the Eastern Caribbean. So I have some experience of living on Barbados. I wouldn't consider to be a small island in comparison to a lot of the other ones, but still a Caribbean island. And it's just, you know, knowing what I know about the exposure that young girls have there and in the neighboring islands, I just think it's amazing that you found your way to this career. And I think it's wonderful. And it's, and so like, not only are you unique in the fact that you are a Black woman in aviation, you're a Black woman in Coast Guard aviation, but you're from the islands too. And you're not the only one. And we'll talk about the others in a minute, but I just think it's fabulous. You're just representing so well and it's so inspiring. And I have more to say about that. I just like, I'm total spaz about the Caribbean. So
I miss it. I love it.
Okay, good.
I'm like, send me back. That's probably my favorite. So I was in, at Air Station Miami, and probably my favorite thing about Air Station Miami was we deployed to the Caribbean and I jumped on those deployments every chance I could get. Like that was just like, oh.
What years were you in Miami?
So I actually just moved from there. I was there from 2018 to 2022. This summer I moved.
Are you kidding me? You know that I live here. I live in Boston. Yeah. Yeah. Like I was stationed in Miami from 2003 to 2007. And when I retired back here. And if I had known that, we would have done this in person.
Yes. Yeah. I literally just moved from there this summer. Like, and believe me, that was like tooth and nail dragging me from Miami. Like I'm going to be back. Like I loved my time in Miami. Anybody like that says they're going to Miami, I'm just like, take me with you.
I'm with you. Like I had so I mean, as a helicopter pilot, I was the most proficient I have ever been at ship landings because I was deployed all over the Caribbean and it really informed just a lot of who I am today and what I am doing and working on today. So that it's just awesome. Okay, good. Well, when you come back, we will get together for sure.
Yes.
This story about you in High Flyers opens with a scene on Tuskegee Mountain Field with Admiral Charlie Ray, who
he's the best.
Such a lovely, like, Southern boy. Like, he just had this Southern, good old boy, but gentlemanly way about him. And there are all kinds of connotations with that, but I'm going to just clarify that this is in the very best way.
Yes.
And
honestly, he's probably the nicest, like, in terms of just people I've met. I usually, like most junior officers, try to avoid, you know, meeting admirals or being on a first name basis with admirals. But like, he is probably one of the nicest people I've ever met. And like, everywhere I've seen him, he remembers you. Like, he remembers your name. He remembers details about you. He did a video for me. Just like, I asked, and I kind of just asked, and I didn't expect I would get anything from me. And he was like, he's amazing. I have nothing.
Yeah. He's the kind of person who makes you feel like you're the only person in the room when he talks to you. And
yes,
that is a very special skill. And a few people have it, and he's one of them. And so he's at Tuskegee Field, and he's talking about what a special place it is, and he's getting ready to award you an air medal. And I want to tell you, I didn't know that was, so I had been out of aviation. I was in Barbados at the time, but I was in Columbus, Georgia. No, Columbia. What? I don't remember. Columbus, Georgia. I don't know. I was 2 hours away from Mountain Field when that was going down. And if I had known, I would have been there to celebrate because you were there with a bunch of my friends, to be honest. And it would have been so wonderful. But tell us about that. First of all, tell us about why you got the air medal and what was going on in Hurricane Harvey. And then what that day was like.
Yeah. So, I got the air medal. I was stationed in Corpus Christi at the time. And we were originally, when Hurricane Harvey kind of formed, it was kind of very quickly, like, I had a check ride on Tuesday, and it was like Wednesday, they were like, and we're, you know, evacuating the aircraft. We're about to get hit by a Category 4 hurricane. It was like, whoa, what? So stationed there. So obviously the first set of responders coming through. So we evacuated out Thursday. We did a bunch of message block drops, and then Harvey hit, obviously, turned last minute, hit rock.
Okay. Board. Hold on. What's a message block drop?
Yes. Oh yeah. So a message block drop is, I like to think of it as message in a bottle, but via the Coast Guard. It is like, think like the movie Message in a Bottle. It's just a little weighted block with a little weighted bag. You put a little message in it. So I had my aircraft commander, Steve Pittman, had been like, hey, type up these messages that says like, there's a Category 4 hurricane coming. Listen to NOAA. Like, if you don't know about this, listen to this channel and get off the beaches and evacuate. So I had like typed up this little message. We printed like 100 bunch of copies of it. And then you just literally stuff the message in the block in the little like clear plastic container that has a little weight on it. And then we just fly. So we flew about 100 feet over the water, over the shoreline. And then you're flying and your drop master, the person who's, you know, just throwing out these messages into the ocean. And so we throw it and we would see on the camera, people would swim up to it and pull it up and read our little message that was like, get off the beach. There's a hurricane, which you should have probably known about, but in case you didn't. And then we did broadcast. But so the overall, what I got the air medal for was Hurricane Harvey and the efforts of Harvey, including the weather. So we did the initial evacuation out and all of the initial like 144 response for it on the first couple of days. There was 3 aircraft involved. Corpus Christi was a 3 aircraft unit. So all of the aircraft commanders, all of the pilots actually got air medals involved. It was just, mine was big is when I got it. And then they also realized like, oh, I was the first. But
can we go back? You just mentioned 144, but I read that you're a 130 pilot.
No, I'm an HC-144 pilot.
Oh, well, and then just disregard my introduction of you. And I think, okay, yeah.
I'm an HC-144 pilot. That's the running joke between me and Commander Menzi. I'm a HC-144. Well, gang. I love my little plane. It's cute.
It's precious. I remember when we started using them, and we had a lot of jokes. But
yes. Oh no, it still gets a lot of jokes. I think most affectionately called by other C-130 pilots when they see it, the baby C-130. That's true. Yep, we are the baby C-130.
Okay, I have to tell you. So there was this little in the worst possible like 1980s graphics ever. There was this little like video that went around when the 144 was coming along, where it showed a Falcon. Because we used to have Falcons that like zipped over the scene and like totally didn't even see like the little boat in the water that needed help. Mm-hmm. And then the H-65 came along and hoisted the person up. And then the C-130 came and like dropped something. And then there was like this long pause.
I'm so savage.
And then the 144 came.
We are there. Yeah, we're not quick, but we'll make it there. So when I went through Corpus the first time around, when I was stationed there during Harvey, a lot of the pilots were Falcon transitioned to 144 pilots. So yes, heard a lot about the Falcon and all the cool places they went with the Falcon. But for Harvey, got it for really bad weather. So we flew initial damage assessments when it had just hit Rockport. It was still a hurricane. And we flew into the Outer Bands, just trying to get to the damage assessment. So it was at Victoria, Texas at the time, which was more inland, but it was going and it was just like, probably just the worst weather you would see. If I had to sum up my Harvey experience, it was like really bad weather, but doing it with some of the funnest flying that I've done. I was a first pilot at the time. I had not made aircraft commanders, so that was a little different. I was the most junior of the crew, but I was really excited. And the aircraft commander, I have 100% respect for trusting me to do this mission with him, because I think that was huge. He could have picked anybody else, but he picked me, and I'm forever gracious for that. So shout out to Steve Pittman for picking me. But yeah, it was 5 days of like, at the time we didn't know kind of like how long we were going to be doing it, but we essentially just followed the storm up from Corpus to Rockport, kind of got hit by the Outer Bands. We were trying to do the assessment and it just went from like, you're seeing stuff to no visibility and just like crazy turbulence. And then flying into Houston, which was the other crazy part, where it was like, they'd shut down. Houston was like pretty much shut down. So any crews, but obviously Air Station Houston is a small unit. Like, I think they're like a 3 kilo unit, but they were taking the brunt of it. Like even though Rockport got heavily destroyed, Houston just flooded out. And so their crews, they had to send in crews. So the 144, and then eventually started bringing in like normal Coast Guard response, the fleet, everybody gets pulled in. They were sending helo crews from around the country to come and help kind of relieve the 65 crews in Houston. So the aircraft would go and pick up from other airports, like Austin or Dallas, or they would come. We started staging out of Alice, Texas, and we would bring people in. So that was what my part was for the initial, like coming into Houston, was like, we were bringing in, response team members as well as other pilots to help kind of relieve Houston. But because there was no commercial flights coming in, because the airport was legit closed, we were flying into Ellington. The only people, say, crazy enough to fly in to a tropical storm is the Coast Guard. Cause the Duots guy, who is the weather guy, when I called him for the weather brief, he was just like, I have to advise you that this is not a good idea. I was like, okay. but the weather was really bad. So yeah, Harvey, at Ellington, the runways were like flooded and it was just like raining sideways. You couldn't see anything. And then you're like landing on a flooded runway. But it was great. Like, I think that's a true testament to how the Coast Guard works as a team, because everybody was in this together. So like, we were the second aircraft to land in the first aircraft, which was our sister aircraft coming from Laredo. It was like, hey, the runway's flooded at this point, but if you come in at this angle, you know, you can land past it, or you're going to have to land short, which nobody really wants to be like, oh, I have to land before the runway floods out. So that was great. And I think that was, it was just great to see everybody. I would say every aviation generation has their like thing that they get to see, where they get to see the Coast Guard in action working together. That was kind of mine, which was like, I really got to see, you know, how fixed wing works with helos. Like, you know, yes, we are not the people that are directly saving someone's life. We're not going to hoist somebody off, but each person has an integral part to making it happen. Like, if we didn't land into Houston, there would be like, how is those people going to get to help out, you know, the pilots at Houston? They would just get exhausted. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so the statement pretty much reads for just like flying in a hurricane. Unintentionally. we're not hurricane hunters. So we're not like, let's go into this storm because we want to see what it's like. You know, we had a mission to do. So we went in and we were like, got to get that damage assessment. And then we were like, oh, this is bad. Let's turn back. And then obviously we had to get people into Houston and parts. So eventually by the end of it, like, you know, there was C-130s, C-27s coming in, they really ramped up. And then the 144s took on a more of a command and control platform with like directing the helicopters where to go and whatnot. So it was probably that experience and flying during Hurricane Maria was probably two of the best. That time frame, I was like, it was amazing. And it reminded me why I joined.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, like, everything that you've described just so well sums up what the Coast Guard, like how we operate in in an environment of crisis like that together, in like the different roles that are played to help whoever needs to be helped in whatever situation it's in. And I was going to ask you this, but I don't feel like I need to now. You know, a lot of times, we receive awards. We receive these wonderful awards for days at work that just feel like they're a normal day. And then we have these harrowing moments where and I don't know if this happens in the 144. I can't speak to that, but I know in the helicopter, I had moments where I was like white knuckled, like, am I going to get out of this? And it gets nothing. And so like, I kind of adopted this philosophy of like, you take the awards you can get when you can get, but in this case, it absolutely sounds like the award was commensurate to the experience that you had in terms of like challenge and stress and also like impact.
Yes. Ironically enough, if I had to compare the two, speaking of that, cause you're right. Sometimes you take what you get, but, I really enjoyed the Harvey experience just because I was so junior and like somebody asked me once before, like, did you think you were like, when you signed up, were you thinking you were going to get an award? I was like, no, I really wasn't. Like, nobody signed up.
No, nobody signed up. I'm going to get an award today.
This is going to be an award. Like, no, I really signed up because I was like, they were like, hey, a hurricane's hitting. You're going to have to evacuate anyways. And I also was like, oh, this is going to be cool flying. And I liked who I was flying with. I did the same mission with that same pilot. So the same aircraft commander, Steve Pittman, we then did about literally like 3 to 4 weeks later, Hurricane Maria operations. And truthfully, I would say out of the two that I felt the most rewarded for, I would say Hurricane Maria, only because that one hit close to home and that's why I was asked.
Because so you were down in the Caribbean for that one responding.
It was, yep. So yeah. Hurricane Irma hit the Virgin Islands, and then whatever Irma didn't hit, Maria hit. And I had a lot going on. Like I had evacuated my mom and grandmother during that time. Like I was winding down with Harvey stuff. And like, so my mom and grandmother were living with me from just getting hit from a hurricane. So when Maria hit, because it had hit the rest of my family, they came and they were like, "Hey, Ronnie, do you want to do this? Because we know this is where you're from." And I was like, "Absolutely." So for me, that mission was more so we would bring people down to Puerto Rico, but then take people out. And I'll never forget, I stationed in Miami. I was doing, I had been asked by, I can't remember, I think it was their Leadership Development Council of one of the units. I think it was like the engineering unit in Miami. They'd asked me to come speak about my experience with the Air Medal. And right before that, this lady comes up to me and she was like, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me, but you evacuated me out of Puerto Rico." And like, I'm so, and I remember feeling like, wow, I remember her because I remember her story. And I remember just how emotional it was, because it was like, you just, it was just the devastation in the Virgin Islands, like in Puerto Rico in that area, was just crazy. And like, she burst into tears when we took off. And my drop master, it was actually a load master, I guess, he was like, "Hey, what am I supposed to do?" And I was just like, comfort her. And so I remember talking to her. I'd talked to her before. And it was, I was trying to explain to him, like, hey, how she's feeling. Like, she's happy. Like, and she'd said to me, she was like, "I'm happy to be gone, but also, like, it's a lot, you know?" And so to have that experience, I would say most fixed wing pilots don't get that experience like that, right? Where we're coming full circle. So to have that, to then her come and like see me and tell me that she was like, you know, she was like, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you. Like, I just want to say thank you so much for everything you've done. And I'm so happy to see, you know, you getting awarded for your accomplishments." It really just was like, wow, I loved the experience with Harvey. Maria holds a special place in my heart, and that hurricane up, I'll never forget that. That was great.
Well, so you say, "Oh, well, fixed wing pilots don't always get that." I mean, like, to be mm-hmm. honest with you, so helicopter pilots get the glory of maybe picking people up a lot, but the back end of that, the reconnection to hear from the person that you picked up, how that impacted their lives. That's just something that me and everybody in the Coast Guard we take it on, and we imagine and accept that what we did had a lasting impact on somebody's life, but we don't yes. typically get that feedback.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't, like, I drop, I don't know, like dozens of people off at hospitals who lived mm-hmm. and I never saw them again. But hopefully that moment in their lives made an impact for them, obviously. So, yeah. Yeah, it's not just the fixed wing pilots who have that, you know, that disconnect from the thing, the impact that they're having. And for you to talk about, I just, like, this is so fabulous, because you are just kind of epitomizing the altruistic, like, at the core, you know, the Coast Guard is just like any other military service. Mm-hmm. It's competitive. There's politics. There's BS that we have to deal with.
Yep.
Not everybody likes everybody, but the one thing that unites us all is this ideal of truly so others may live. And yes. I know that that's the rescue swimmer motto, but it's also the rest of ours.
Yeah. I mean, like, we all want to, I feel like we all on some level joined to, you know, because we like to help, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We want to. Yeah. And it's in the great news is that you get that, like, that immediate feedback, knowing that you supported stuff like that. So we're not in it for the awards, but you got yes. the award, right. And the Coast Guard put on this giant show for you.
Ooh, man. Yeah.
Like, that was all for you?
That was, yeah. So that day is still, not even still, that day will probably forever rank, unless I get married or have a kid or something, and that's like outranks it. But that day will forever, as of right now, that ranks as the most wild day of like my life. Like, everybody always says, "You'll never forget your wing." That's true. But I will never, I mean, I kind of like don't remember everything because it was such a daze, but it was the most surreal experience I've ever had. And I was wholly unprepared for the level of recognition, I guess, I was getting. My mentor, I don't know if you know, Mark White had, he was the other
pilot. Oh, hold on. I know Mark White from when he was enlisted.
Oh man. Yeah. So Mark was the other pilot, and Mark is like a big brother to me. We were stationed in Corpus together. And
then Miami.
Yeah. I just continue to follow him. I haven't followed him to DC, but Mark is like a big brother, and he had tried to give me a heads up that like, hey, this is a big deal. And in standard me fashion, I was like, la, 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 like, here I am.
I'm just going to show up.
Yep. And I remember when I started realizing like, oh, this might be a big deal. Cause my old boss at the time, now Captain Kennedy. Yeah. So he was the one that kind of put this whole thing together. He had reached out to
me. Okay. Now I believe, oh, now it all makes sense.
Yes.
So Marcus and I don't know if you know this, but he calls me his air mama.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't. I call myself his disappointment.
Well, we're all related then. Oh, I can't wait for him to see this.
Okay, yeah, he's great. He's awesome. He's probably going to be like, really, Ronnie? Like, I'll make him proud one day. I did make him proud.
That's so great. So yeah, no, there are so many. Marcus,
the aviation, so, Coast Guard aviation is a small world.
It's very small, but even more importantly, like he and I were running in parallel with our initiatives to sort of network and bring our community's issues to light in the Coast Guard. And so like I was running with the women's stuff and he was running with the Black stuff. And there was so much in common that we talked and still talk all the time. So
yes, he's great. But he was the catalyst for this.
I believe that.
And really, yes, rant like just, he's amazing. And he had called me about it because initially when my award was probably one of the last to go through, because I was a first pilot, everybody else was aircraft commander. And it was kind of like, you know, here's a first pilot, you know? But so eventually, so everybody else had gotten their air medal awards in Corpus. They had done a big ceremony there, but mine had still not been routed. And I had pretty much just accepted like, okay, I guess I'm not getting it. And so I waited. Yeah, it was a while. He probably knows more of the backstory, but it was a while. So it just so happened that by the time my award went through, it was like about to be Black History Month. And he was the one who like, I think he'd figure out, he's like, oh, I think Ronnie might be the first Black female, which at the time it's easy to be the first when there's five of you.
Yep.
Everything is a first, like as the first Black female safety officer, but there's only five of us. So
yeah, exactly. Everything's a first.
Yeah. So he started that process, but he called me and he was like, hey, we were trying to figure out whether they presented in Miami or presented at Tuskegee. They did both. Just cause my family wasn't going to be able to have made it to Tuskegee. So they did one here for my family in Miami for my family, which I really appreciate. Okay. It was Captain Platt at the time.
Oh, nuh-uh.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So Captain Platt, he hooked it up. And then it was crazy. We had Admiral Brown flew in. So Admiral Manson Brown was
doing
a presentation.
You got like the all-star team looking out for you. So I want to just say something like, I'm just going to say this. Like I'm out of the Coast Guard so I can say whatever I want. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm so happy to hear that this, whole event was grounded in your community, because part of me was like, it's so amazing and it's wonderful, but okay, it's a PR stunt by the Coast Guard to, you know, like there's always this weird line that you're like, okay, how much are you going to exploit this for your own benefit? But to hear that it is grounded in your community with the people that you're mentioning just makes me gloriously happy.
No, they looked out for me. And I think more so because there were people that came before. So you have like LaShonda and people that had that big kind of like you know, not target, but just like they were the first ever, like, you know, so I kind of had people enough that were senior that could kind of look out for me, which was very appreciated because I really did just show up. Like my part of it, like Mark White ran the Miami part, but like, I remember people were texting and like, Jeannie was like, hey, I'm hopping on a 60 and like, oh, I'm flying. And so I was kind of just like, I was like, at the time I was like, oh, I'm going to see my friends. Same thing. Like, la, 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 just clueless me. Just here I am as a attendant. I just do work. And like people were texting like, oh, we're coming. But at first I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, it's a fly-in. Like, I was like, oh, it's cool. There's like a Black History fly-in. And then I'll just get the award. Like, they'll just do like what normal and just be like, quick award. And Captain Platt at the time, he was like, hey, yeah, well, we'll bring people. Like each aircraft was going to bring people up. And so then at first I was like, oh, this is a lot. Like we're bringing people. But it still hadn't really hit. And Mark was like, Ronnie, this is a big deal. And then I remember when I heard that Admiral Wei was coming, I was like,
Oh, it's a big deal.
I was like, this is a big deal. But then I still didn't really register until we were coming into land and I saw like all these planes and then like all these people. And I was just like, I remember having like, I had a full on just like, I stepped out, like it hit a point where I was like, I was overwhelmed. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. Like I'm at Tuskegee. Like this is historic, like this historic place that everybody knows about. And like my, like I've had a family member go through there as a Tuskegee. I mean, like it just was kind of a surreal experience that I was like, wow. And Mark, I remember Mark came outside because, you know, he knew me. He knew probably like it was going to hit at some point that like reality was going to set in. Like, wow, this is a lot. And I'm a person, I hate crying in public. I'm like, I'm a sucker. I was like, cloudy with a chance of meatballs, suck those tears back in. So I was outside just trying to keep it together. And he came out and he was like, you good? And I was just like, this is a lot. And he was just like, yeah. I kept it together, but it, the whole day was just kind of like a blur of like, I just couldn't believe that it was like happening and that it was happening to me.
Oh, so, oh, there's so much good stuff in that. Like, there's just so much. Like all of the, this, like I'm so at once in admiration and awe and also mildly in jealousy of your position in your community to have that funnel happening for you. And like all these people that you're talking about, I know them. I know them personally. I know some of the things that some of them went through and I know others very, very personally. And the fact that they like came around you like that and lifted you up like that, just, there was a time and I'm sure you know this, but I'm just going to say it here because this is a topic of conversation that we have a lot in this community. But, there was a time when women, anyway, at least in the Coast Guard, were just fighting for their own survival. And they didn't want to stand out and they didn't really have the means. I mean, we didn't have social media and, like back in the day, we barely had email.
There was no
Me
Too movement.
There was no way. There was no way for them. They were isolated at air stations, like spotted around, and there was no way for them to communicate with other women. And so they had to just fucking fight for their survival in the environment that they were in. And so as they got senior, that's all they knew. They did not know how.
And I will
give our naval aviation sisters some props for this after having read their book in our book club in October. Because those girls, they learned actually from the Black men in the Navy how to do that shit and how to support each other. And so I'm just like here to just all the love and respect to you guys and that you got to benefit from these years of hard work that all of the people who came before you did. It just brings me so much joy. I have to, so I know like we're going longer than I
Oh no, you're fine. I will say that's kind of in the video I said like, and I truly stand by it. Like we are a product of the people that came before us. It's like the little mm-hmm. Tuskegee Airmen video. And throughout my entire life, that's pretty much been a testament. Like, there are so many people that have, and I've also realized just too, there's people that have like worked behind the shadows to help me out, whether that's like, oh, mm-hmm. I was struggling at Swab Summer and like, I made it. Thanks, Mr. Dalmaida. just, you know, or like, you know, just different people. Ryan Seymour, who gives me tough love to this day. Just always, you know, he's there for me. Big brother. He let me vent to a point and then he's like, what are you gonna do about it?
I love it. Well, so I'm going to, so we've kind of like made all of these, you know, we've been dropping names that nobody
knows.
Who's listening knows, but you and I know. And I just like, let's go back to, I'm going to make a confession and, mm-hmm. and it's an embarrassing confession, but I feel like it really drives home the point of representation. And you've had that in front of you in the Coast Guard, which has been wonderful for you. And I love that they're taking care of you. So I will share that the book that I'm writing mm-hmm. was inspired by many things, by my experience in the Caribbean and with Haitian and Cuban relations, and especially Haitian migrants. It's inspired by this idea that we don't know what we don't necessarily know the victim, that we help. Like, we don't have a chance to follow up and hear mm-hmm. what that impact is. But it's also inspired by the fact that when I had the inception of this story idea, which is a young adult novel about a girl who learns how to fly from a Haitian American.
Is it Angel?
Pilot. No, it's not Angel. I mean, I didn't know Angel. I had the inception of this idea in 2005. She's a Haitian American pilot. She's a veteran, and I'll explain that in a minute, but she's also an aerobatic pilot and she does, disaster and relief work. So when I had the inception of this idea in 2005, I knew I wanted the mentor character in my book to be a Black woman. Mm-hmm. I was stationed with Marcus Kennedy at the time. He was junior to me. He was my co-pilot on many missions. But he was already working at the time, like with how to network and support the Black members in the Coast Guard Aviation. And I was working for women in aviation. At the time, I knew I wanted this woman to be a veteran, a military veteran and a helicopter pilot, because that's what I know. But she needed to be retired from the military. She needed to be like, I wanted her to be a retired commander. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I could not, at the time, 2005, 2006, Janine Menzi, our first female Black pilot,
had just
graduated flight school.
Yes.
So I'm a creative writer. I'm writing fiction, but I can't even get to that level of fiction of there is a Black woman who has had a full career in the Coast Guard and could be retired. So I'm gonna nick her Navy, because Navy, that's probably believable. So for the last however many years I've been working on this freaking novel that I've mm-hmm. that is really close. I'm telling you, it's really close. And I'm in what I
like, don't be like George R.R. Martin. Finish that book, bro. Finish that book.
You're gonna wait like 10 years. It's already been 10 years. So I am revising this novel right now. So I rolled into the Women in Aviation International Conference in March of last year.
Yes.
Janine was there. Janine was wearing her 05 oak leaves. She's the ops boss. And I had this like epiphany. Oh my God. So all this time I've been writing this book, and this woman, this character, Haitian American pilot, veteran, has been a Navy pilot. In this rewrite, she is a Coast Guard pilot.
That's awesome.
And it just, but it's awesome, but it's also like how important, and I am somebody who advocates this all the time about the importance. And the whole point of me making her a Black woman is the importance of representation. And I couldn't even get there with my own imagination until I saw it for real
in person. And it's wild that it took, I think, like, trying to explain to people when they're like, oh, like when it was only five and it was like five Black women, I was like, oh, currently. I'm like, no, like ever, like the first
ever
Black woman pilot ever in the Coast Guard literally happened in the last, in the 2000s. Like that's.
Crazy. And so like in 2010, I reported to Los Angeles and LaShonda, the first,
was the first helicopter pilot,
was a brand new co-pilot. I mean, that's where we've been. So anyway, like I'm very embarrassed about that, but I also think that it really drives home this point of representation and how much you have benefited from them, but also how much you mean to, young women who, need a role model, who need to see themselves and how great it is, you know? I saw somewhere. Oh, I'll make sure that Jean gets this. Yeah, I don't even think I've told her this whole story yet. So she needs to hear it. So I saw, I think on Sisters of the Skies, a post about you getting the keys to
the Virgin Islands.
Thomas. Yeah, to the Virgin Islands. Yeah. All of them? I thought it was
all
just
of them. All of them, which is crazy.
You got the keys to Virgin Islands.
Somebody was like,
that's cool.
That was wild. That was. Also ranks as like top five crazy moments. So they, because of the pandemic, it got delayed because I was actually supposed to get it in 2020, but, they had to go through the Senate, the Virgin Islands Senate, the Senate president passed a bill. She had, was the one, that authored the bill that routed it up and then it went through the different committees. But yeah, I got the key to the Virgin Islands, which, as a native Virgin Islander, like that is just, that's like the icing on a cake that I never thought I would even get. It's like,
You're
like if somebody
told me
I get red velvet Nutella cake for the rest of my life.
You like, are what? A rock star. Absolutely.
So that, yes, I did. That was crazy. That was this May, literally had gone, like just gotten back from deployment. They were trying to do it the week I was deployed and they were like, oh, we can zoom you in. And my mom was like, absolutely not. Like she deserves to be here like everybody else.
Good for her.
So shout out to my mom for pushing that. And then I flew down and it was, and then literally flew down to a Sisters of the Skies event because we had Girls Rock Wings and I did it right before.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay. Oh my God. That is so cool. I want to talk to you more about that in a few minutes. So, you're an 04. How long have you been in the Coast Guard? And don't give me the all my bloomin' life shit. Like,
I know. I guess technically I have to say 10 years of active duty, a little over 10 years of
after the academy.
After the academy. I count the academy because that's like 4 years of my life that, you know.
I know, but you got a degree. Like the prior enlisted girl is like, well, I was scraping barnacles off of buoys and I didn't get a degree out of it.
That's true. But I'm like, dang. Shout out to C-Spy whose time counts.
Yeah, that's fair. That's super fair.
C-Spy. But yeah.
So you at least have 10 more years before you can retire is the point, right?
Yes. Yep. I've got a while.
So what are your goals? What do you want to be? What do you want to do?
I don't know. So that's kind of funny. Because I truthfully have said, like, I'm going to do this until, and by this, I mean the Coast Guard, until it's not fun anymore. That's just,
wow, you just made 04 and you're over 10 years. You may as well make it all the way.
I know. Well, we'll see. So it depends on where I get sent after this. I'm currently at, the Navy flight school. So I'm kind of full circle. Like it's crazy.
Oh, I don't think I knew that. So you're going to be an instructor?
I am. I actually just finished my flight last week. I'm waiting for my papers to sign, but once the paper gets signed, I'll be the newest advanced flight school instructor for fixed wing, for multi-engine. So I'm here back in Corpus at multi-engine advanced flight training. So it's kind of huge. It's someplace I never, when I was here as a student, I ever thought I'd come back to. So it's kind of crazy coming back full circle.
Yeah.
And hopefully making a difference.
Well, so what advice do you have for young women And you know, I didn't ask you this about being a Black woman, but like, what advice do you have for young Black women who might be interested in aviation, might be interested in military aviation, might be interested in the Coast Guard? Tell us, what advice do you have?
I would say, yeah, it's going to sound lame, but Nike, I mean, they come up with good slogans. Just do it. Just do it, but with caveats, because I am a realist, right? Nothing comes easy. Like in life, if it's something that is worth it, usually you have to work for it. And I would say just being like Black and a woman, right? You're going to have, and you probably saw, people are going to make comments. People are going to say stuff. People say out of pocket things. They just, you know, just
I call them stupid things, but
yeah, okay, yeah.
One way to put it.
but don't let that stop you. So my grandmother gave me the best advice, because I did struggle through flight school. Like I enjoyed advanced, but primary, I struggled. And like, I think a lot of, I'd say women too have like imposter syndrome. And I still deal with that as like, do I really belong here? I just had, you know, I was going through instructor training. I'm like, do they me as an instructor? And it was funny that it took flying with my new CO at the unit kind of was like that validation that I needed, because I was so stressed out for the flight. And I remember I did the flight, and it was actually like, not that, it was like probably the best of the flights on that block. And I had talked to him, and I was like, you know, I was like, I was like, maybe I need some more training flights. And he was like, no, he's like, you're ready. He was like, you did good. And I was like, oh. But I'm like, you know, in my head, I was like, I don't know. But to get over that, my grandmother gave me advice, was like, never let you tell you no. Let, like, keep going until they stop you, almost. Because sometimes we can talk ourselves out of things, and we can, and like, not saying that hard things are going to happen, but like, there's a resiliency that you have to have being a woman, being Black, being any minority in a field, in whatever. And you just have to kind of keep going until they stop you. Like, don't let you stop you. Don't let your fears, don't let your, you know, like, oh, that one flight, like maybe that's not the flight that's going to kick you out. Like, yes, maybe you had a bad flight, but like, keep going. It's easier said than done, but like, that advice has stuck pretty true, especially when I was like in primary and I was like, oh, I hate it here. And my grandmother was like, she gave me two things. She was like, treat every flight like it's your last, because it might be, if I get fail out, not like I die.
Right, right.
And then, you know, don't let you tell you no. Someone else. But yeah, that's what I would pass, is like, just do it, and then know like it's going to be hard, but don't let yourself be the thing that stops you.
I love all of that. Nobody told me that. I had been at sea for like 2.5 years before I went to flight school. And my attitude in flight school was like, they're going to have to kick me out because I'm not going back. Unless they make me.
Never going back.
I'm not going back. They have to make me. But it was kind of the same thing. Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to tell me no. I'm going to.
Like, you're going to have to tell me no. Like, you're going to have to make this decision. Like, you're going to have to look at me and be like, you're end of the line.
You're out. Renaqua, this was so fabulous. I'm so excited that we got to talk. I just want to remind everyone that this book, okay, High Flyers, 15 Inspiring Women Aviators and Astronauts by Anne McCallum-Statz, as the title says, offers some fabulous, wonderful role models for young people and old, our age as well. And I was so excited to see Renaqua highlighted in the Coast Guard, represented in this book. But there are lots of other great stories in there. And thank you to Anne for putting that book together and for featuring
she's
Ronnie.
So sweet.
And she's lovely. And, you know, we have a bunch of other women in the Coast Guard, in your group, your Fab Five now. Amazing Eight, whatever we're going to call them. And I hope that they and you all decide at some point when you're ready to tell your stories, because we want to hear your stories. We want to read them. We want them memorialized in books. So keep going. Keep doing what you're doing for now. And when you're ready, share your story. Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I'd like to thank Shasta Ways and Michael Wilds of the Women's SOAR Group for their assistance in producing this interview. The Women's SOAR Group is a media company that gives women a platform to express themselves. In the meantime, don't forget to check the show notes for a link to sign up for Literary Aviatrix monthly newsletter. Blue skies and happy reading.